Hi, and thank you for joining us for In All Things, a weekly podcast of the Evangelical Presbyterian Church. I'm Rachel Joseph. Your host for In All Things is Dean Weaver, State Clerk of the EPC. We pray that God uses Dean and his guests to inform and inspire you about the EPC and how God is working in and through our global movement of Evangelical Presbyterian Churches. The motto of our family of congregations is, in essentials, unity, in non-essentials, liberty, in all things, charity. Now, here's Dean.
And thank you again, Rachel Joseph, as always. And thank you, my friends, for joining us for another edition of the EPC's podcast, In All Things, which we drop every Friday at your favorite podcast distribution site. Or you can just go to epc.org and download it and share it with your friends, share it with your family, share it with the staff at your church, your small group. That is the way the word gets out for this little humble episode that is In All Things. And we're grateful that you're part of it. If you haven't figured it out yet by this point in time, we are a conversational podcast, which means I usually am sitting across the table from a friend and we have conversations about matters related to the EPC, but oftentimes they extend well beyond the EPC. And today we are continuing part two of a conversation with a ruling elder in the EPC, Holly Lazaro. And Holly is an elder at the Langhorne Presbyterian Church outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and she's the founder of Study with Friends. And so, Holly, welcome back to part two of In All Things.
Yay.
Yay. glad to have you back with us again. So today's episode of In All Things is brought to you by the gospel priority of effective biblical leadership. Sometimes we call effective biblical leadership discipleship, and discipleship is an important part of what it means to be a follower of Jesus, a person who, as Damian Gerke says in his book, In the Way, a person who intentionally seeks to live their life to model after the teachings and the life of Jesus Christ. And that is to say, we look at Jesus's teachings and we look at his life, and as his followers, we seek to emulate that. I've heard it described by some before as saying we're replicas of the rabbi. Jesus has given us not only ideas to shape the way we think and understand the world with us, he has done that, but he also has given us his life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so we are intended to model his life in the context of where God has called and placed us. And the EPC takes that very seriously as we seek to help pastors, people who are called into ministry, people who are serving in youth ministry or children's ministry. We have something called the Next Generation Council that takes up a kind of next gen ministry super seriously. We have retreats for pastors and their spouses. We have provided through networking with other great organizations like PIR and Pastor Serve, how we care for pastors in their families in ministry. There's so many different ways in which we're trying to pay attention to being healthy as leaders, because healthy leaders help lead healthy churches. And so in our effective biblical leadership or discipleship gospel priority, we really take that aspect of the Great Commission very seriously. Because, of course, the EPC's mission is the EPC exists to carry out the Great Commission. And it goes on to say, as Presbyterian, Reformed, Evangelical, and Missional churches, and those four things, Presbyterian, Reformed, Evangelical, and Missional, are the ways in which we, as particular followers of Jesus, live out the discipled life of carrying out the Great Commission. And of course, the Great Commission isn't just going to the ends of the earth to evangelize. It says go to the ends of the earth and make disciples. And in our first conversation, Holly helped us to say there's kind of like two pathways in which the church should be looking and thinking about really all of their ministry, including digital ministry, and that was evangelism and discipleship. And Holly, last time we kind of went there in terms of the evangelism part of digital ministry, but we want to talk today a little bit more of the discipleship part of digital ministry, because Study with Friends, it does a lot of that. So could you talk to us a little bit more about the pathway of discipleship and how it can interface in a healthy way with digital?
Yeah. So one of the things that we do at Study with Friends is I think it's in the outro of all of our episodes, we direct people to a local church. We remind them to go to a local church, how to find a local church, because we recognize that while we are missionally a discipleship ministry, the way that we engage the world does have missional elements. There are people who are seekers who might listen to something like what we're producing before they're ready to go into a church.
Right.
And so we do give them kind of tips and tools for how to find a good church.
Oh, nice.
But we always point to the local church.
So you're not trying to replace the local church. You don't want people to as a substitute,
no.
But you're purposefully building an ecclesiology that says, look, you take this step and it leads you to this local body of
believers. From day one. And I got wise counsel from one of my friends in Salem Media who said, do that. Make sure you always point people back to the local church.
But that's part of your CCO training too. You came up in the CCO, and the CCO, one of the things I love about them is that they have this built-in ecclesiology, right? To be a CCO staff person, you have to be anchored in the local church, and you're always trying to get students into the local church. So they're not really parachurch. They're really in the church, with the church, for the church.
Yeah.
And so you've taken that worldview that you were discipled in and you brought it to your digital space.
Yeah, and I think just biblically, no ministry offshoot can replace the church.
Right.
And I think so wisdom indicates that we're doing something that is a ministry, a discipleship ministry. It's odd in that it can be evangelistic and discipleship the way that...
Well, they're related, right?
Yeah.
I mean, evangelism is part of the early pre-evangelism, and evangelism is the early conversations of discipleship.
Yeah.
I mean, frequently discipleship is happening before someone's even come to Christ, and they don't even maybe appreciate that. But the lines there are a little blurrier between evangelism and discipleship sometimes.
Yeah, and we've always been very aware of that because we do have a very strong presence in digital, but we started on the radio. And so people, what we always remember is like people just wander around the dial. I mean, that still happens.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's press pause for a second, Holly, because I don't know that people get the scope of Study with Friends. So give me some metrics here, because you mentioned Salem Radio, you mentioned, you know, on the radio, just so people have some context, because I don't think we went there in the first episode. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more about Study with Friends? I mean, tell us where you can be found.
Sure.
Tell us what all you produce. Give us some metrics so people can kind of gauge this a little bit for themselves.
Sure. So we talked about the origin story a little bit last episode and my personal calling. As I mentioned, I was teaching in the local church. And over time, I mean, I had been teaching in the local church for about 10 years before Study with Friends started, which was also about 10 years ago. And so I was a teacher of women. I'm not taking a stand on egalitarian or complementarian, but that was my calling.
That was your niche.
Mm-hmm. And so what I've noticed was I would hear, I had a baby, I can't make it as much as I would want to. And I miss everybody. I miss the fellowship. I'm caring for an elderly parent. I had to go back to work. And so for a lot of reasons, women would come and go. And you know, when you have someone that you are discipling closely, and then they are no longer able to be regularly with you in the ways that you had designed and experienced before, you have a heart for those people. Like they feel like your spiritual children in some ways. You're like, well, where is she? How is she doing? And so this started as, what if we just mic'd up a Bible study, the one we're already doing, and then they could just grab it on demand. And then they would still feel kind of connected, you know, and of course, as you've already detected, then I would make sort of intentional moves to like connect with them for coffee and so forth, but they're still getting that biblical feeding that they covenanted with me to get, right?
And I want to come back to this. I'm just push pause for a second, because I think you just gave us a clue to something that we might want to revisit, because I do have a great curiosity, Holly, on how digital can be the front door, not the back door. Mm-hmm. But what you just said about like ministering to people who maybe couldn't be there, but then you made the appointment to go get them with coffee.
Yeah.
That probably has a lot to do with closing that back door, right?
For sure.
Okay. We'll come back to that.
Yeah. And I'll give some more developed thoughts on that.
Yeah.
So that's how it started.
Okay.
And I had a friend who was helping us with the website and just helping us put all of it in a digital place. And he had a friend who had experience in radio. And so he came to me and said, I think this would be great for the radio.
Hmm.
Because you have these packaged like 25 to 30 minute episodes or Bible studies that you're putting out there for this small group. By the time we did this, there were about 200 women who over the years I had taught in some manner. And so I had this group in my mind. I had these women in my heart and I was like, okay, this is for them, 200 people. And he said, you know, can we pray about that? And I said, no, thank you. Which is totally my cycle. I mean, I feel God calls me to a bigger space and I say, no, thank you, quite authoritatively. And then quite authoritatively, he redirects me.
Right.
And so then we ended up on radio. And then over time, we developed a blog and we have a prayer wall and we have an email newsletter and devotional and we have a YouTube channel. So after that, it sort of grew.
Right.
But from the beginning, we had this radio element, which has, as I said, sort of a missional facet, which is people wander, and we got emails all the time. I just happened along your station and I got so much from it, or, and I'm going to listen every week now. We would get, and this is why I can't put myself authoritatively in complementarian or egalitarian. I mean, I'm an egalitarian, let me be honest about that. But when it comes to should women teach men, but we would get like surprising number of emails from truckers who were listening to the radio.
Right.
And they would always start by saying, I know I'm not your target audience, but, and so it was God's way of showing us that there was both a discipleship and a missional element that was happening. Mm. And we just wanted to be conscious of that. And that was really a lesson for us in consistently pointing people back to the local church. And so that's a long way of saying that I'm going to go ahead and say that I think that's an important part of like how you develop your strategy. Of course, we always want to point people to Christ, but when we're in the digital space, we should also be very intentionally pointing them towards the local church, right, the in-person experience.
Right. That's a huge takeaway.
And so you just have to have that in your mind.
So that sounds pretty expansive. You've gone from just recording Bible studies to YouTube, to blogs, to all kind of digital recordings, radio. Do you have any metrics out there? I mean, do you guys have a sense of what kind of impact you're able to connect with friends?
I mean, we have a decent following on social media. I think probably all told, we have about 50,000 followers across the platforms on social. I think the easiest one for us to quantify is YouTube.
Okay.
We launched our YouTube channel in 2021 and we get consistently 10 to 15,000 views per week.
Wow.
And we have about, I think that's great that people watch it, but I think it's more impactful to me in my spirit that people are subscribing. So we have about 6,000 subscribers.
Right.
So if you want to think about it, I mean, it's probably a false dichotomy, but if you want to think about it, like if you had 6,000 members of your church and 12,000 like regular attenders.
Uh-huh. So subscribers have more buy-in.
Yeah, because they're saying content. I'm committed. I want to see.
Yeah. And they've agreed to a certain mm-hmm. delivery. Like I'm going to get content
exactly.
dropped in my box
exactly.
every week.
Yeah. And, yeah. So subscribers to me are more committed.
Yeah. So downloads and clicks for them would be much higher than
So those are our numbers roughly.
Okay.
And the podcasts on our streaming, they're similar numbers. So over time, those things develop. Although our YouTube channel blew up, like it's just been a few years and that went well for us.
Yeah.
And I think that it was because we had learned a lot in the years prior regarding how to do digital ministry. And we had made a lot of mistakes that we just didn't repeat there. And we've made new mistakes there. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But we had learned a lot. And I'd love to share some of those things. I have some kind of practical.
Yeah. Well, I'm all ears because I mean, I think you could take us to school because I mean, I've never thought about should the EPC have a YouTube channel and go into that space, but talk to us about what you think about that.
Do I think the EPC should have a YouTube channel?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But let me, so this is great. Let me talk to you about how I think you, all pastors and ministry leaders should be thinking. So let's build some foundation from a discipleship standpoint. And we talked a little bit about evangelism. These things are all true. The same principles apply. First, you want to remember that what we just talked about, can't say it enough. Always point your digital ministry work towards Christ. And then secondarily, close second, towards the local church.
Right.
Be intentional every time you put digital content together that you are always pointing them to the local church. Because digital is clinical in its, it is arm's length and it is not relational.
Right. Whereas local church is the embrace.
Yeah. And we need that. I mean, we know that we need that. We talked last episode about the Trinity as an example. We need that fellowship. We were built for that. Mm-hmm. And digital does not provide that. And I can't say that more clearly.
Right.
Digital, however, has a place. Studies indicate that people are watching screens on average 7 hours a day.
Wow.
Doesn't include TV. So you're on your phone up to an average of 7 hours a day. You're checking
kidding.
It.
You're
checking.
7 hours a day.
Do you know that most adults check their phone, just check it, about 100 times a day?
Yeah. I bet I've checked mine 3 or 4 times since we've been
talking. Yeah, I have too. And so that's the world we live in.
Right.
And so while I say again and again, and if I had a digital highlighter or a Sharpie, I would underscore it. In-person ministry is the most important ministry we do, coming from a digital girl. Yet our sheep, whether they are our sheep yet, we have evangelism, or they are our sheep now, the people, Christians, they are consuming digital media. So we should be in that space so that they have good content, good reformed confessional content to consume, to grow them. Because if not, they're going to watch something else.
Right.
And so that's why I think we must be there.
So I oftentimes think, Holly, you know, I've never applied it to digital until recently, but the passage in Romans where Paul says, do not be conformed to the patterns and images of this world, but rather be transformed by the renewal of your mind. It's not just enough to say to people, stop scrolling on your screens, right? I mean, that's to stop doing something. Mm-hmm. If you don't replace it with something that's transformative,
right,
the void will get filled, right? I mean, you're going to stop watching cute puppy videos and you're going to go to watch some other kind of videos if you don't replace what you're trying to get rid of with something more redemptive.
Yeah.
So it's not just an absence of something. It's a trade out of something that is conforming you to the images and patterns of this world with, on the other hand, things that are going to help your mind be trained on that, which is good, right, acceptable, and worthy of praise. Yeah. So if we don't provide the digital content, then their minds are going to drift towards, or they're going to be attracted towards stuff that will be more conforming versus transforming.
And let me make a note. We're talking from the ministry leadership standpoint, but producing good, reformed, confessional, theologically sound, biblically sound content also gives our parishioners an avenue to evangelize. So they say, you know, you're talking to someone and you say, I love my church. I go on every Sunday. You're just meeting someone. Here's a few resources for you to take a look at. This is a taste of my church. Mm. And so it's important that we equip our saints, even as we are putting that content out. We're also there's multiple uses for it. And I think we just have to think about that. Like,
I mean, I don't think people realize, Holly, that, for example, nobody anymore just says, I think I'll try out that restaurant cold. Mm-hmm. They all go on Yelp, mm-hmm, or they all go and look for reviews, and they're all trying to get a taste of that before they actually are willing to go and invest time and money in that experience at that restaurant. And so we all know that, like, people are checking out our websites before they come to church. But what we maybe didn't appreciate is that long before they ever come to church, like, you say to someone, invite your friend to church.
That's right.
That's already one step further than where most are willing to go. Rather,
that's a phase two situation.
That's right. It used to be a phase one, and now it's a phase two. And phase one is, here, go check out these digital resources, introducing that so they get an appetizer so that you can get to phase two and hopefully bring them to church.
And Dean, you know what? Think about it this way. Humanly, how do we share knowledge with each other now? I'm a book nerd, so I still will recommend a book. I want to hear book recommendations. But guess what? I store those in my Goodreads on my phone, right? So even a book recommendation has a digital element for me. How do I share knowledge with you? I might share a podcast. I might share a YouTube video. My husband learns everything he does around the house from YouTube. He doesn't ask his plumber. How do we exchange knowledge now through digital?
Right.
And so are we not called to share the knowledge of Jesus Christ, then we must do it in ways that are relevant. I also was hoping I could share some very specific tips on digital for the folks who are listening, because I think that could be really useful. So just like a primer, every church has a website and an email list. That's not a digital strategy. Those are digital channels.
Okay.
So other channels include social media, webinars, Zoom meetings, YouTube videos, courses, long-form Bible studies that are digital, email devotionals, short Bible studies. I do a Bible minute. So the digital strategy, like the main church strategy, has, I think, a really great way to do it is SMART goals. Okay. So SMART goals are specific. So SMART is the acronym. Specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. So I want to give just some examples. A specific digital ministry strategy goal would be to start small. Don't try to adopt all possible digital offerings at once. Choose something that you're passionate about or but which you also have the bandwidth to develop.
So start with one thing.
Yep.
One thing that you have expertise on, if you will,
yeah.
and stay with that initially until you feel like you've kind of figured it out.
Because otherwise it's difficult to be sustainable.
Yeah. I always find people go too broad, too fast in ministry. Their ideas outpace their capacity.
Which is why I think it's good for us to kind of just like, let's look really narrow. Okay. Like we talked about why it's important. Now, what are some real quick hows?
Okay.
Right?
So that's a SMART strategy. What else you got?
Okay. So, then measurable. So before you launch, decide how you're going to measure success.
Okay.
Then measure and adjust the offering as needed. The nice thing about digital is all the analytics, use them.
Right.
Achievable. So again, start small. I recommend a finite thing for your first go, like a 3-part webinar series or a 5-part podcast series. Don't promise yourself or your congregation that you're going to do a podcast or webinar every week forever. That's untenable. It just is. Your pastors, you have other things that are more important and you should take some things on, but don't take on more than you can do. So roll it out in small bites. Achievable.
Okay.
Also in small bites like that, people are more likely to try, right? Okay. So then the next part of SMART is relevant. Your congregation and community should drive your digital content. So what is God already up to in your church? Mm. And how can you translate that into a digital offering? So relevant. Mm. And then time bound. Deadlines are our friends. So if you don't have deadlines and milestones, digital can easily fall off the radar screen, especially if it feels new and scary. So set a goal and set a deadline to meet it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think.
It can also feel more hopeful there because you know if you have a deadline, something's going to be done. And if you say, I'm going to do a 3-week series and you set a deadline for it and then it's done, then you can look at it.
Exactly.
And I also think it's really important to go back and I think the measurables that are built into the backside of a lot of social things is that you want to do evaluation and feedback, right? Because then you might say, wow, that really hit the mark. It's a sweet spot. We might want to come back and do something like this again in the future.
Yeah. When we started our YouTube channel, we were getting like 100 watches a week. And we just kept looking for what hits, what lands, but this is important. We didn't change who we were to appeal to that audience. We changed how we packaged who we were.
Right.
And I could talk more about that, but I won't.
Okay. All right. Well, those are super helpful, practical hints for people who are looking for digital strategies different than digital channels. Because a lot of people just think, I'll put up digital channels and I have a website, therefore I have a digital strategy. But that's not a strategy and you use SMART goals. Excellent. Right. Okay. Let's pivot to your book.
Okay.
All right. Sermon on the Mount. Why'd you do it?
Why did I write that book? So we have an audience and I became really passionate about the Sermon on the Mount. I'm pursuing a degree in theology and biblical studies. And I took an intensive on the Sermon on the Mount and that had partnered with several other classes that I had already taken. And I just became, like I said in the first episode, like a student gets juiced about teaching something once they really understand it. Like I think that's how a teacher's heart works. And so I just really felt like this was an opportunity to disciple the people who have chosen to engage with our content in something that's, I think, one of the most important passages in the Bible.
Yeah. As a person who's studying theology, you're really a practitioner. So you're looking for something practical here.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I mean, what you designed is not something that is intended to just simply get people to think deep thoughts. You're getting people to engage in a teaching of Jesus, which is maybe the teaching that frames out what it means to be living in the kingdom.
Yeah.
And you want to do it in a very practical way.
Yeah. I think the best teachers, and I would not put myself in the category of the best Bible teachers, but I would aspire to be good. The best Bible teachers give us biblical truths with theological understanding, and practical application.
Ooh, could you say that again?
I just made it up. Biblical.
Oh, it's so good. Don't forget this.
Give that to the Holy Spirit then.
You know, there's this one point where I think Tony Campolo says, I was so good, I wanted to take notes on myself. So I think you should remember this, because that was really good. We can roll back the tape and recapture, but that was really good.
Yeah, so good, really good Bible teachers provide biblical truth with theological understanding and practical application.
I love that.
So I think when you sit with me as a teacher, what I would hope to give you is something fresh that maybe you didn't see, or something deeper than what you had read in the text prior to that. Frame it in a theological, how then do we understand better God, Christ, and ourselves? And then what do I do with that when I walk out of this room? How do I live into that? Like, what does that boots on the ground look like for me? And so that's my always sort of my trajectory, my focal point when I teach, because I think with the condition of our church, we have to make sure that people recognize that it's both very spiritual, but also very practical. Our faith is both in equal measure.
So let's just take the Sermon on the Mount just in the broadest possible strokes. What's the biblical truth? What's the theological kind of foundations underneath it? And then what's the practical takeaway? If you could just look at it in the big picture, right? You know, I'm a Haddon Robinson guy, so I'm always looking at the big idea. Mm-hmm. What's the underlying big ideas here? And, you know, interestingly enough, Holly, Haddon often said that the way you would craft the conclusion of your sermon was with this phrase: as a result of this sermon, the congregation will.
Yeah.
And then I always put in three things. I put in an informational thing, that is that they should learn something or know something that they maybe didn't fully understand or know before, go a little deeper in their knowledge and insight. Their attitude should begin to change toward that thing that they've learned. Mm-hmm. Because if people have an attitude about it, they won't ever do it, right? That is to say, if I say to you, you should evangelize more, and people are like, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, well, then you're just going to make them feel shame if you try to tell them to do it more. So you have to get people to the point where they go, you know, I've received this incredible gift from others. This is the doctrines of grace. I should share that with
them. Yeah, like a heart shift.
They have to have a heart shift. And then finally, like, what is the thing I'm asking them to do? Mm-hmm. So just real quickly, because I think we're going to get to a part three here, because I want to continue this conversation and we're starting to run out of time, but I want to land here a little bit, and then we'll talk about this book a little bit more, and then we'll talk about your next book, which gets into one of the other areas of discipleship, which you're super passionate about, which is apologetics. A little teaser for what now is going to be episode three of our conversation. But just broad strokes, Sermon on the Mount, why, what's the biblical truth behind the whole Sermon on the Mount, if you could?
Jesus takes our sanctification seriously. He wants to mature us for our good and his glory. I think the thesis statement of the sermon is Matthew 6:8a, which says, do not be like them. Mm. Because I think that it then begs the question, then what should we be like?
Oh, we're going to stop there. That's so good. That's so good. That's a teaser. This is going to make all of you want to come back for part three. Because do not be like them. And then how did you say that?
Then what should we be like?
Oh, that's great. That's what we'll pick up with episode three.
Okay.
And I promise we're going to land this on episode three. All right, my friends, I hope this has enticed you to come back again, because I think this would be really good for us to lean in on this Sermon on the Mount and discipleship and how we should then be. And then we might even get in a little bit on apologetics. So stay tuned for the next episode of In All Things with Holly Lazzaro as we continue this conversation. Until then, my friends, please share this with others. Let others know about this conversation. Invite them in. Maybe this is a little three-part series that your small group will sit down and listen to and then have conversations about, and that could stimulate some more thinking and growing in relationship with Christ. But as we conclude, remember, the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, for in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. And I think about that, Holly, in terms of worldviews too, like that God wants us to inhabit his thoughts about kind of these overarching things that shape our understanding of all of reality, which is a big part of this whole nature of discipleship. They've been created through him and for him. He is before all things. And in him, that is in our Savior Jesus, all things hold together, for he is the head of the body, the church. And that includes our beloved EPC family of churches. And my friends, until the next time when we gather and continue this conversation with Holly, I bid grace and peace to you.
Thank you again for joining us. On behalf of the entire team, please join us for our next episode. For more information about the EPC, including a directory of local churches, online resources, and much more, visit our website at www.epc.org. I'm Rachel Joseph. I pray you have an overwhelming sense of God's presence in all things today.